Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready to get blitzed on the Blitz podcast at thehuddle.com with your hosts Steve Gallo and Harley Schultz.
Welcome back to another week, I should say mid-season episode, of the Blitz podcast. We're heading into week 8, and we're not heading there alone. We're heading in there with Harley Schultz. Harley, how's it going?
It's week 8, and as we're recording this on Monday Night Football, I'm watching number 8 for the Minnesota Vikings, Kirk Cousins, struggle against the San Francisco 49ers, which shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that is a fan of the 49ers, knowing that the 49ers have a very good defense. But if you're thinking that your team is in a position much like the Vikings are here, they've got to figure out a way if they're going to try to come back this season and do anything, they got to do something starting tonight. But I just don't think it's going to happen. So fortunately, myself, I've got a second team, and that's the Chiefs, as most of our listeners know. I'm a big Chiefs fan, so. It's always nice to have that second team to fall back on. So as the Vikings fall apart, at least I can cheer for my Chiefs, right? I mean, you've got some teams that you're favorite, right?
Yeah. I tried to hide it early in my career, but at some point you just realize, you know what? It is what it is. I'm a Philly fan. I'm born and raised in the Philly area, so I root for all four of the Philly sports teams. Tonight's a little somber for me because we had a clinch game in the bank, and the Phillies came up short against the Diamondbacks, so they're going to have a game 7 there tomorrow night. Anyway, yeah, I mean, the Eagles played a hell of a game last night against the Dolphins. For those that don't know, we normally record on Mondays, but we were recording on Tuesday. I'm so off. Goodness, the Phillies had me off like their offense was off tonight, Harley. The Eagles played Sunday night. It is Monday night, but we're recording about a half hour, 45 minutes later than normal. That's better, right?
And, did Schwarber hit another home run today?
Unfortunately, he did not. That's probably why I'm in the funk that I'm in. But in any event,
that's a question. Does Schwarber have more home runs this season or singles? I'm always intrigued by guys who approach that statistical mile marker.
So during the regular season, I believe I know the answer, but I'm going to double check it for you real quick because I've got it right here at my fingertips, believe it or not. And I can get it to you. I know this is a football podcast. We're talking baseball. It is what it is. Let's see. He had 47 home runs, and he had 115 hits, so you can do some math here. So he had 115 hits, right? And 47 of them were home runs. That gives him 68 other hits, and 19 of those were doubles, and one was a triple. So we're going to take 20 off of that. He had one more single than he had home runs this year. 48 singles, 47 home runs in the regular season.
Now, I think that that means his slugging percentage must be considerably higher than his batting average then.
Oh, his batting average. He had a historic season. He did not break the Mendoza line. 197.
Did he double his batting average with his slugging percentage?
I'm going to tell you what he's got. And he did. 197 batting average, 47 home runs, a 344 OBP because he walked 121 times, a slugging percentage of 475 and an OPS of 819.
So nearly three times the batting average and slugging percentage.
Yes. I mean, that's more than 1.5 times, basically. 475. It's crazy, actually, right? The 121 walks, he scored 104 runs, too. I'm sorry, he had 104 RBIs and scored 108 runs. I give you all of that without the batting average and somebody saying he probably hit between 240 and 270, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. Anyway,
I mean, we're both older gentlemen, so we remember back to some of the originators of that type of offense. Being from Minnesota, I got a chance to witness. I have family that lived in Wisconsin, so growing up, I got a few chances to see Rob Deere play for the Milwaukee Brewers, and he was kind of like that too.
Yes.
Perennial 190 or so batting average, and always a threat to hit 40 home runs in a season.
But you know what Rob Deere probably never did? Was a leadoff hitter at a 197 batting average, like Schwarber is for the Phillies. And it just, it works most more often than not. You know, they won 90 games in the regular season, and, you know, the playoffs, they got rid of the Marlins in two and then took care of the Braves in four. And now they're having a little problem with the Diamondbacks because their pitching kind of let them down in games three and four, and game six they were flat. So we'll hope they come out and do something. It's kind of like fantasy, right? Where you've got your studs and you're playing them, and next thing you know, they've got a great matchup and they don't do anything. It happens.
Josh Jacobs.
Yeah, Josh Jacobs, exactly. So anyway, tonight what we're going to talk about, and it is Monday night, and again, the game is going on. I do have one more question before I say what we're going to talk about. If the game is out of hand for any reason other than Kirk Cousins, but the game's out of hand, right?
Yeah.
Do we... And we see Minnesota pull him at halftime. Does that mean he's going to be traded before the deadline? I don't think it happens, but it'd be interesting, wouldn't it?
I don't think it's going to happen.
I don't either.
I really wish it would. I'm team reboot for the Vikings, but I don't think it's going to happen.
Yep, I don't either. Hey, the Eagles got themselves a nice player in Kevin Byard for bag of chips and a couple of late round picks. Terrell Edmonds.
Yeah, Tennessee is obviously going into sell mode. So, I mean, there's players to be had there. I mean, it'll be interesting to see where guys like Derrick Henry and Dustin Hopkins.
DeAndre Hopkins
end up going.
Yep. And people wonder why.
Philadelphia won that trade, though, too, with the A.J. Brown trade there.
Yeah, I was going to say, people wonder why Tennessee even picks the phone up when Howie calls between A.J. Brown and Byard and some other stuff. But in any event, so what we're going to talk about tonight is cutting bait on youth and dynasty / keepers, I guess. And then, of course, we'll do our normal DFS pay up, stay away, and all that good stuff. But before any of that happens, we throw it over to Harley for this week's Blitzed Podcast News.
Thank you, Steve. In response to a controversy from week 7, I have penned an open letter to all of the fantasy industry. At this point, all I can say is that if you started Bijan Robinson last week, you deserve what you got from him. I mean, you knew perfectly well going into this season what sort of asshattery Arthur Smith does with his talented skill position players. So, you know what? I don't feel bad for you in the least. This letter is signed a permanently peeved Kyle Pitts owner. Former Division II star and Harlan Hill Award winner Tyson Bagent got the Week 7 start and victory for the Chicago Bears. This has left several Chicagoans wondering if Bagent can be this season's Brock Purdy. I mean... Bagent does hold the D2 record for career completions, career passing yards, and career passing touchdowns, including 94 passing touchdowns over just the last two seasons. But is he capable of making that huge of a leap to relevance in his first year in the pros? The simple answer to that question is best represented by posting the Danny DeVito head-shaking meme. Now, that said, I will be putting in a free agent acquisition bid for him in my XFL Dynasty League this Wednesday morning. For the second time in 3 weeks, Deshaun Watson was cleared to play in a game, or in this case, returned to a game, but he did not. The first time it occurred, Coach Kevin Stefanski claimed it was because Watson knew his body better than the training staff did. This time out, Stefanski claimed he didn't want to risk further injury to Watson. Well, which is it, Coach? Does Deshaun know his body more than the coaching staff, or do you know his body better than him? You can't have it both ways. Early reports suggest that Kyler Murray will return for the Cardinals no later than week 10. Still, he could possibly return as soon as this coming week. If I was Murray, I would want to return sooner rather than later, because the longer he is out, the more likely it will be that the Cards will have a high enough draft pick to select his successor. And finally, welcome to your Week 8 waiver report, where you will be bidding on Royce Freeman, Daryl Henderson, Kareem Hunt, Devin Singletary, Tyrod Taylor, and Julio Jones. Wait, what year is this again? This has been your BPN News Update.
Yeah, that is a throwback, isn't it?
Good God, where are these guys coming from? This is like the 2019 or 2018 season?
I just need to throw
We're pre-COVID. Does that mean we have to go through all that COVID garbage again?
Hope not. Yeah, some interesting stuff this week, that's for sure. The Bears thing, people think that there's going to be quarterback controversy. I don't know about that, but we'll see. What I was not expecting was to see that rookie quarterback in the locker room shirtless with a tattoo the size of Kentucky across his chest, quite honestly. That'd be like.
I will say this. So I did watch part of that game, and I will say this. He had nothing to lose out there. And I was really happy to see him playing with a certain level of moxie. Because I always tell people, when you're talking about skill position players in football, quarterbacks, wide receivers, cornerbacks, positions that are impact players, defensive ends, they have to have a certain level of moxie. They have to have a certain like drive and heart that other positions on the field might not need. And he showed that. Yeah. It was against the Raiders, but he did show that.
Well, you know, that's why I always had a problem with – if you remember when Joe Flacco said he thought he was elite?
Yeah.
And then, like, the following year, Eli said the same thing, and people lost their minds about it. How could they think that? Well, you better think that if you're a starting quarterback in the NFL, right?
Exactly. And you see the opposite of that, too. You see quarterbacks that don't have that and other skill positions that don't have that, and then they just never quite fully develop into NFL starters, because at the NFL level, everybody thinks they're a star.
Well, and in a sense, everybody is a star. Even the worst player in the league is an unbelievable football player, right?
Well, if you think about how they grew up, I mean, at their youth league games, at their high school games, and even early in their college careers,
they were always
all
the best.
Of these players were the heart and soul of their team. They were the impact players, the biggest, best of, yep. of their school or maybe of their state. Or maybe even of their college or even their college conference.
Right. And in the NFL, honestly, it's the difference between players being fantastic and average is it's minuscule. It's truly a game of inches, right?
But that ultimately points out, I mean, every single season we get someone saying, well, you could put this so-and-so team up against Alabama and Alabama is going to beat them. It's like, no, they're not.
Uh-uh. Yeah, I've always been on the side of the NFL in that I don't believe that the worst team would lose to Alabama. Maybe in one game, something, anything can happen in a fluky game, but not consistently anyway.
Yeah, it's good. It's not as common. I mean, when you think about baseball, you do see like in the spring training, sometimes minor league teams will pull off a victory against a major league team.
Right.
But again, I think that's a whole different element, baseball versus football. You just wouldn't see that where a college football team would be able to succeed against that, because even at school like Alabama or an LSU, someone with a tremendous lineup of players, they're still going against guys who were the best of the best at their college when they were there. So,
and on the baseball front, I mean, you're talking about a sport where if you fail 70% of the time, you're a Hall of Famer at the plate.
Well, and that kind of gets into our talking point for today, which is talking about, okay, you got some of these guys who are coming out of school, and they were maybe among the best in their class, and they're drafted high, and then comes your rookie draft in your dynasty or keeper leagues, and you draft them high, and then they don't perform in the pros.
Well,
what do you do then?
And let's say this too. You may be in a keeper league where you actually draft them in the later rounds, and you'll have to make a decision on keeping them or trading for somebody like that you want to keep with a later round designation. Same thought process, though.
A couple of players come up big in that conversation from this year's rookie class. Early on this season, Zay Flowers struggled as the Baltimore offense struggled getting themselves together with the with their new offensive coordinator there. And so I think people were kind of like hesitant about, like, they were talking about cutting him, not obviously not the Ravens cutting him, but fantasy owners who drafted Zay Flowers at the end of the first round were talking about cutting him so they could pick up someone else, like a waiver wire flavor of the week. When do you say, look, hey, I invested a first round rookie draft pick in someone and they aren't doing it for me. When do you feel comfortable cutting them? Now, I think a lot of people are probably looking at their pick of Quentin Johnston, who has done nothing for the Chargers, even with Mike Williams out for the season. And they would say, well, and up until last week, people were saying, well, Jackson Smith and Jigba, who was pretty much a consensus top five pick in Superflex this year, not doing anything for the Seattle Seahawks. When do you find yourself saying, hey, look, I can't afford to keep this player on my roster anymore?
So I think the first thing that I need to point out is, as soon as the draft is over, to me, the designation of where you drafted them is out the window. I don't care if you put a first in them. I don't care if you got them for a seventh. When the season hits and it's time to look at dealing guys, you're dealing them off the merit of what they've done so far or what you think that they'll do going forward where they are, right? And as a trader, it's up to you to sell. If the guy's underperforming and you think you can sell his opportunity down the line versus you trying to get somebody that's giving it now, that's up to you. But if you come to me in a trade and say, well, he cost me a first, so I want this back because I'm going to say, oh, well, I don't care. Look at what he's doing or something like that, right? Or, you know, I paid a first for him. I'm not going to take such and such and such and such. Well, okay, I understand that, but guess what? You're 5-4 or 5-3 or whatever, and there's a couple teams ahead of you, and you need to keep pace, and you're not getting the production you need out of Bijan Robinson. So I'm offering you an older player that's performing, say, Austin Eckler.
Austin Eckler.
That he's kind of injured, but even then, you know, an Eckler and maybe another wide receiver to help bolster and try to set yourself up because you're out of it, possibly, right? And you want to get a young asset that you hope that Arthur Smith doesn't poison, but then that's your selling point for why he should sell to you.
Yeah, I think you also have to kind of look at there's a certain element of value in future draft picks, but there's also a certain element of negative value in future draft picks. And here's what I say about that. Every future draft pick is both it's Schrodinger's cat. Every future draft pick is both a potential stud and a potential bust.
And here's how I look at it. I actually lean on the side of bust because if you go back in rookie drafts and you look at them honestly, you'll see that far more often players do not live up to the expectation or even the draft position as people would think. I'm that guy that's almost always trading my draft picks for known quantity. And I was going to say that's the key also, is knowing who in your league values the actual draft pick more than you over younger, older players. There are guys in Dynasty, they just don't like guys that are 27 years old. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. For me, and again, in this particular case, it had a lot to do with where my team was in the standings and where this other team was in the standings. I'm competing for a title this year. His team is in a rebuild mode. I had acquired through a previous trade a first-round pick for next season. That projects to be a top 3 or 4 pick.
Yep.
And he had Austin Eckler and Aaron Jones both sitting on his team. Obviously, Jones was hurt until this past week, and Eckler had been hurt until 2 weeks ago. I sold him that pick. I didn't really want to, but I did sell him that pick for those two. I did that because I felt I have a great chance to win a title this year. But at the same time, Aaron Jones is 30. Austin Eckler, I believe, is going to be 29 next season. So neither of them is young by running back standards.
Not at all.
But I also don't see either of them as being completely toast yet.
Right. It does fall off quick for running backs. But here's what I'm going to say, and I may pull us back into the baseball world, actually. there are people that are perpetually rebuilding in dynasty and keeper leagues.
It's scary. I know a lot of leagues that are like that.
And you know, you it's a fine line of when you really want to do that. But when you have a shot, when you really feel like you have a shot, you need to go for it, because it's not easy to win leagues, especially if you're in tough leagues with really seasoned players, or if you're in bigger leagues like 16 team leagues, because there's more room for error in those kind of leagues, right? It's akin to if you didn't make that move for the two running backs, right? Knowing that, well, I'm taking risk here, but you're looking at your opportunity for this year. It takes me back to when the Washington Nationals had Steven Strasburg earlier in his career, and he was coming back off of an injury. I believe that they were a playoff team or going to make the playoffs, and they weren't going to let him pitch but so many innings. And I believe that it wound up costing them getting to the World Series. And I disagreed with it. And I was like, because nothing's a given. You're not guaranteed to go back next year and get back there, or the year after. Now, granted, it was a few years later, and they wound up winning the World Series, but I don't think Strasburg had much to do with that. I don't remember, honestly. But I just... There was also a few years ago when San Francisco was really good, and you remember they just their window it didn't close, it slammed shut. You remember that?
Yes.
Most people may not. So that those kind of examples always make me say, go for it. You don't dip your toe, right? I'm going to try a little bit of risk. No, risk be damned. Either do it or don't. That's how I look at it.
So if you had taken Quentin Johnston, say, at pick 108, 109 this past season in a super flex, would he still be on your roster today, assuming your team was competitive? Maybe not definitely in the money, maybe not definitely out of the money. But if you were, say, competitive, say 4-3, 3-4 range, would you keep him on your roster, or would you cut him straight outright, or would you look to trade him for whatever you can get?
I would not be cutting him straight out, no. But I would be looking to try and use his expected upside to possibly trade for a different piece if I really think that we're not going to get what was expected of him. And for what it's worth, I'm trying to check here because I've got too many damn teams to be able to remember who I have on them. He is on one of my teams, and I did draft him. Let's see where I drafted Max. I think I drafted him as high as 105, believe it or not. Isn't that sad? Where is draft? There's the draft. Let's just see where Steve wasted a pick on him at. 1-5 over the likes of, let's see, it went Bijan, Jahmyr Gibbs, JNB, Addison, and then I took Quentin Johnson. So I let Anthony Richardson go by, a linebacker, Zay Flowers, Dalton Kincaid, Michael Mayer, Devin Achane, forget it. The guy in Miami, Achan. Will Anderson at 12. So that was, and then we've got Jonathan Mingo, Laporta, Bryce Young, and CJ Stroud. That rounded out our first round. So my team stinks right now because of a lot of different injuries. I think I have 5 different players on IR, which it's tough to overcome in a 16-team format. It's full IDP, and I've got some of everybody, especially the defensive sides, hammered. So, no, I mean, I'm running him out there right now out of necessity. I had to activate him, actually, because of some injuries earlier. I'm not going to trade him for a bag of chips, but I will trade him if somebody decides that they think that I'm out of it now and I'd like to have him as a piece, and how about would you be interested in this or that? I'd consider it, but I'm the kind that probably would give him, since I'm out of it, I probably would hold him until next year and hope that to see more, or try to trade him during the draft when somebody misses a wide receiver.
We're talking about Johnston here, obviously.
Yes.
Who was one of the consensus top 4 receivers in this draft. How about we look at some of the really hyped running backs that kind of were in the end of the first round, early second round type range? Guys like Tank Bigsby and Zach Charbonnet and Kendre Miller,
okay.
All of whom have really just not been given an opportunity, really. I mean, Bigsby got some goal line touches early on. Are any of those 3 guys worth holding on to from a dynasty perspective, or do you think that they're all just going to disappear with the hype?
I think that, I mean, at this point, they're probably worth holding on to, but I will say I'm a what's the word I want to use? I just lost it. I'm a destination over what's the word I want to use, Harley? Help me out here, buddy. Potential
over scheme?
Yeah, no, I'm a scheme and a fit person over anticipated production based on their college history.
So, okay.
So if Bijan Robinson would have ended up where Saquon Barkley was, I wouldn't have Bijan Robinson as high, because you're like, okay, that's a timeshare at best, right? Unless you think they're going to trade somebody. So the Zach Charbonnets of the world, I hated his landing spot. He was kind of almost off my board. Achan, I didn't love the situation there. I wasn't sure what we were going to get out of Miami. It's been great so far this year.
There's so much talk about Delvin Cook going there this offseason too.
Yep, exactly. So for me, it's all about fit and where I expect and what I expect to have happen. And Achan's shown, okay, he could be the guy. I don't expect Mostert to stay. He's older, right? He's having a great year, but I wouldn't expect him to be there long term. So Achan, I'm in on him. I'm ready to keep him. But Charbonnet, I'd probably sell him for something if I could. I'd probably get a third round pick for him if I could, honestly. And in that case, look to sell him to the KW3 owner, right? Because that's where he's going to have value if something happens to that guy. So that's how I would look at it, and I try to be proactive if I could.
Yeah, I think that's kind of the key we have to take away from this conversation today is if you – and I think you touched on it really early on. If you have a pick, say a 107, 108, all the way through like the mid-twos, and that player isn't performing at that thing, you've got to forget about the fact that he was a high first, early second-round pick for you. You've got to disassociate the pick with the player and think to yourself, it's like, okay, I don't see a future for this guy here. And so I'm willing to sell. I'm willing to get something that's maybe less than what I would have gotten if I had traded the pick prior to the draft.
Here's the thing. No one ever got rich by selling something for pennies on the dollar, right? Mm-hmm. But if you wait too long, those pennies on the dollar could be worth twice of what it could be down the road. So
exactly.
The other thing I recommend is you really have to take out the emotional part of it. And if you made him as a draft pick, there's an emotional attachment there. Sometimes it's best to actually just reach out to a friend that's maybe not even in the league that understands fantasy and bounce it by him and ask him what his thoughts are. Don't even tell him who your player is versus the other player and say, what would you think of something like this? And then that will help to make you think a little clearer. I mean, back in the days when we had AIM Instant Messenger, I had a handful of guys that I was in certain leagues with and then not in other leagues with them. And we would bounce stuff off of each other all the time. And then you would ask them for their opinion. And by the time you were done giving them the scenario, you're like, oh, you know what? I already see it now. Thanks. Don't even need to hear what you have to say.
Now, let's look at the other end of that scope here.
Sure.
Say you're a team that's 2-5 or 1-6 or even 0-7. Are you willing to buy some of those players for pennies on the dollar? Or do you look at them and say, hey, look, they haven't proved it yet. I don't believe that they're going to happen. It's not going to happen for them at all. And I would rather concentrate on just looking at future assets.
No. So the way I would look at that is when you throw pasta against the wall, the more you throw, the better chance of it sticking, right? So if there's a couple of players out there like that that fit that mold, I may try to acquire more than one of them to improve my odds of getting one that hits. And that's my selling point to them. Look, I know that you put a high draft pick in them. They're not performing right now. You kind of got a chance to maybe make the playoffs. You're in a better spot than I am. This guy's not going to do me any good. I'm willing to bet on that guy's upside, but I know that I could wind up giving you something for completely nothing the way it looks right now, but I'm willing to take that risk. That's how you have to sell it. And yes, I would do that. Would I do it for one player in general? Sure. But do I try to accumulate where I can instead? Yes.
I think that's kind of, again, the other big part to take away from this is don't be afraid to sell those players, and B, don't be afraid to buy those players.
No, not at all. And then I'll leave you with this, and then you can see if you want to just transition out to DFS. But sometimes the best absolute trades you make are the ones you don't make.
100%.
So don't always try to force something just for the sake of forcing it, basically. Well, do you think we answered and talked enough to give people an idea? I think that the takeaway
from this, and I'm sure we confused some listeners, but at the same time, I also hope we opened up to some listeners that it's like, you know what? Well, it is what it is. The draft is passed.
The thing is, that's just it. It should confuse people because there is no canned response for anything in fantasy. Everything truly is a one-off in a sense and depends on so many more. I hate when people say, should I trade for this guy or should I start that guy? And I try my best to answer as many people as I can, right, when that happens. But what I hate about it is you don't ever have full context to make a correct answer, right? You don't know who else is on the team. You don't know what their record is. You don't know where they stand in the standings from a making the playoff standpoint. So you don't know how much risk reward they should take. You don't know what their opponent's starting lineup looks like. Their opponent's starting lineup could be dung. And there's like, no, don't even worry about taking risks. Just go with Manny, Mo, and Jack. You'll be fine. You know what I mean? And that context is such a big part of how and what you should do. It truly, fantasy, especially dynasty and keeper leagues, especially dynasty leagues, is a puzzle. And you have to be able to fit the puzzle pieces together to give yourself the best chance to win, and then understand, no matter what you do, luck is still a huge part of it. And health.
Well, and my last point on this too is, it not only fitting the puzzle pieces together, but also, you know, get players you like, get players you want to root for, get players that you want to cheer for and want to see succeed on a weekly basis. Because ultimately, I mean, fantasy football should be fun.
Yep.
Now, I know a lot of days you go into it and you'll see Bijan Robinson not play a single snap and it'll piss you off beyond belief. A lot of days you won't make a ton of money because of a stupid player like Josh Jacobs not performing up to his standpoint. But you know what? Did you have fun? Did you set the lineup that you thought was going to be the best?
Yep.
Did you take a little risk? Did you maybe win a little bit of money on the side? You know what? You had fun. Enjoy it. This is a fun sport. We'd only get it for a few months out of the year.
Yep.
You know, and we're only alive for so many years in our lives. So enjoy it while you can.
So let me add this. So we all have those home leagues where we know certain players will take the homegrown player, right? The home team player a round or two early. I actually used to not take Eagles in drafts because I figured if I was going to lose in fantasy and my team was losing, I didn't want to get let down twice. So that's a different way of looking at it also, right? But at the end of the day...
Well, it helps for both of us to have Eagles and Chiefs be our two favorite teams because those two teams actually have a lot of great fantasy skill position players.
Yeah, today they do. I'm talking about like back when I first started with like the McNabb days and stuff. I really avoided most Eagles, quite honestly. But another thing to keep in mind too is, as long as I don't lose my train of thought here, is when people ask me, who do I start? And they're truly a wash, right? Like you can flip a coin and it does not matter who you start.
Yeah.
My response is start who you want to root for, right? So say you're a Philly fan and one of them is a Chiefs wide receiver and the other one's a Cowboys wide receiver and they are projected and we think they're going to have the same exact production. I don't think I want to start the Cowboys guy because I don't have to root for him.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if I think the Cowboy guy is going to score three times as many points, that's a different story. That'd be a dumb you-know-what if I didn't start him. So that's all I'm trying to say. And you're right. Have fun. Process over results, as they say, too.
I think we might find a couple guys in my pay-to-plays this week that I might not want to start, but I'm going to start anyways.
Okay, there you go. Well, that's a good segue. Let's head on over to our DFS pay-ups, stay-aways, and value plays. And as we do that, I will point out the Texas Rangers on a home run that I did not see who it was by have just taken a 4-1 lead in the top of the third against the Houston Astros. Winner goes to the series. All right, back to DFS. Harley is going to set an over-under for what we'll agree on. Harley and I do not discuss this for anybody that's new to this show, which I doubt that they are. Also, believe it or not, one of our listeners, maybe our only listener, reached out to me and told me that our show was not on iTunes this past week. Had to reach out and talk to our IT team. They figured out what the issue was, and we did get it fixed. I think it was late Saturday, so this episode should be up on iTunes. He said, well, I guess I'm not going to get to make any money on DFS this week. And I said, no, you can still listen to it from the homepage for free.
Yes.
Okay, go ahead. Set the over-under.
The line this week is 5.
5. Oh, let's see. 1, 2, 3. I'll take the over. I don't like it, but I'm take the over. We're going to push.
Interestingly enough, I thought we were going to get the under today, but...
Okay. Well, start us off. Who are you paying up for at the quarterback position?
Well, this was a little tough for me because I was looking at the quarterback position, and there's actually a few matchups I like and several matchups I don't like.
Yeah.
So deciding on a pay-to-play and a stay-away at the position was really kind of tough. ultimately, I went ahead and said to myself, you know what? I'm going to pay for the guy that I like to watch, and that's Patrick Mahomes at Denver. His price is the highest. And last time they faced off against each other, only a couple weeks ago, he only threw for one touchdown. But he did throw for more than 300 yards. And that was the third straight game against Denver where he's thrown for more than 300 yards. You know what? This past week, Patrick looked like he finally had his full moxie back there. Does that moxie word again? Players playing with moxie. And I think part of that was getting back Mecole Hardman. Even though Hardman was only had one catch, his presence there seemed to bring back a little jive and juck to the outfield that is their wide receiver core running deep patterns, something that they've kind of lost over the last 2 weeks since Justin Watson has been out. So having him on the field as a potential threat to go deep really helped open things up underneath, allowed Rashee Rice and Travis Kelce to both have huge games.
So we have a match, but you were going to have twice the chance to make a match, quite honestly, because I kind of did like you did. I looked at it and said, okay, who do I like? And liked a couple, didn't like a couple. And I noticed that Pat is the highest priced quarterback on DraftKings, but he's not on FanDuel. So Jalen Hurts is $200 cheaper on DraftKings and $200 more on FanDuel. So I actually wrote down Pat Mahomes and Jalen Hurts, which is funny because it's two quarterbacks that each of us like to watch. Mahomes to me still is the one that you pay up for. But if you're not sure about it and you're like, I don't know who I should go with, play Hurts on DraftKings for $200 less and play Mahomes on FanDuel for $200 less.
Okay, well, so we're not going to match on stay away then, because I'm unfortunately for you staying away from your quarterback, Jalen Hurts, at Washington. Now, I know Washington has been atrocious against the pass this year, particularly to wide receivers, but Hurts was wearing a knee brace at the end of week 7. Now, every report I'm reading says that the knee shouldn't be an issue, but personally, I'd be a little hesitant, seeing as how Hurts is a rushing quarterback. They are playing on the road. It's a divisional road game. And he's facing a pass rush that's legit in Washington. That does kind of concern me a little bit.
A little bit. Believe that knee, that happened in the Rams game, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. On that one play where he like had the guy on his shoulder and he got away and threw a completion for a first down. Do you remember that one?
I do.
So if you were to go back, actually I have it. I'll text it to you so you can see it. You can see where he rolls the ankle, but also the knee almost looks like it got hyperextended a little bit.
Yeah, that's kind of what it looked like in the vision.
So we'll see what happens. But yeah, I get that. So,
I think for me, again, that price tag, the difference in price between Patrick and Jalen, one being Patrick, I feel much more comfortable paying that high price for Patrick than I do with Jalen, considering all the possibilities there.
Fair enough. And Washington, no matter how bad they are, they do seem to always play the Eagles tough.
Yes.
For some reason. Who knows why. So my stay away is actually a guy that shockingly has been on fire until he met those Philadelphia Eagles this week. And that's Tua Tagovailoa. I hate saying his last name. Tua.
Tagovailoa.
Tagovailoa. So the Patriots are nowhere near the Patriots of old. We know that. But even though it's on the road, if Bill's going to do something, he's going to find a way to limit or hopefully negate some of what Tua adds. And it's just,
yeah, I totally agree with your take on that. I seriously considered Tua. For me, it just came down to the price differential with Hurts and Mahomes. And I figured that I had to go Hurts as my negative because of the fact that he's so close in price to Mahomes. But I agree. This is not the week to start Tua.
Yep. Nope. Just there's too much risk, right? When you don't have to have it. So maybe he bounces back. Maybe go back down there to Miami and they put up 700 yards of offense and he passes for 350 and 5. Who knows? I don't think that happens against New England's defense, though. Not with Bill. Who just celebrated his 300th win and would like to get 301 down in Miami. Who's your value play? This was tough.
This was really tough because I really didn't like any of the cheaper options this week. It's really not a lot to choose from. Part of me kind of wanted to split it in half because there's a extremely odd pricing discrepancy on FanDuel this week.
Yeah.
The guy who is the sixth highest priced quarterback on DraftKings is Matthew Stafford. His price on FanDuel has him at nearly the mid-20s at 6,500. He's actually cheaper on FanDuel than he is on DraftKings. That never happens at this position. And it is against Dallas. But, again, the Dallas passing defense is not the Dallas passing defense of the past. They don't have Trayvon Diggs there anymore. So I kind of want to play Matthew Stafford on FanDuel as my value play. But, again, it's not a like a blow-up spot for him, I don't think. So I settled on a guy that I think he's been getting an opportunity to throw the ball as much as he wants, and that's Gardner Minshew. It's at home versus New Orleans, 5,400 on DraftKings, 6,900 on FanDuel. He's actually more expensive than Stafford on FanDuel. But they're going to throw the ball at will in this game because it's hard to run against New Orleans. Their run defense has been elite for several years now. The one exception is that they've actually been pretty bad against running quarterbacks. Now, Minshew is not a running quarterback like, say, Daniel Jones or Lamar Jackson or even Jalen Hurts, but he has run the ball in the past and even ran for 2 touchdowns this past week. It's one of those things where he might get like 20 to 30 rushing yards and a rushing touchdown to go along with whatever he throws for here. Now, here's the really crazy thing, though. New Orleans has played 7 games. Through those 7 games, only one of the quarterbacks that New Orleans has faced is clearly a better quarterback than Gardner Minshew. They faced 6 quarterbacks that very arguably could be considered worse quarterbacks than Minshew.
So I don't hate it, honestly. I looked at it, but I went with a guy. I think he's a little bit cheaper, actually. Let me see. I didn't look at his price. I just know I picked him. He's pretty far down the list. Let's see. Where's Minshew? 54. Yeah, my guy's a little bit cheaper on both, actually. I'm going with a guy that's coming off a bye. And what I don't like about him is he's on the road, but because he's coming off the bye, I can deal with it. And at the price I picked him at, $5,100 and $6,600, I think it's worth a shot. Bryce Young. He is facing a Carolina team that probably people will be shocked if they look at their season-long stats against quarterbacks. But over the past 3 weeks, Carolina actually is 7th in points allowed to the fantasy position. So I'd roll the dice with Bryce Young if you didn't want to pay up for quarterback at all.
Okay, so Bryce Young is with Carolina.
Oh, what did I say? Oh, Jesus.
I just want to make sure you got the right numbers there. So.
Yeah, no, I can't read. What do you want me to tell you? I can't read. I'm looking at stuff backwards. Bryce Young, he's playing.
There was a lot of talk he was going to be drafted by Houston preseason.
Yeah, that's you're right. Houston is 11th. I wrote down the wrong number when I looked up there. So I get those guys confused. What do you want me to do? I'm old.
No, don't be surprised. This is actually going to be an interesting study here because you've got the two rookies going up against each other in Young and C.J. Stroud. Obviously, Stroud's prices are much higher because
they are.
That offense has been a little bit more dynamic this year. But, no, I like both of those guys in this game. This could be a high-scoring game that people are going to be off of.
Yeah, now what people don't realize is when I'm making my notes, I write buy, OB for off buy, stuff like that. That's why I got it screwed up. I just looked at it wrong. But, yeah. Anyway, that's what happens when you try to do stuff too fast and watch a Phillies game 6 when you're getting hammered in the head because they can't play well in a clincher. Bryce Young, Carolina against Houston, who's coming off a bye, but it's in Carolina. And like I said, Houston's given up the 11th most points to the quarterback position. Carolina of the last 3 weeks is 7th, so we could see a shootout.
Yeah, I really think that that's going to be a sneaky game, too, that people are going to be off of. So feel free to invest in it.
And I still like the price. At $5,100, definitely worth it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's run over to running back so I don't have to embarrass myself anymore.
It's okay. Yeah. I'm going to pay up for Alvin Kamara at Indianapolis. The Colts have allowed 8 running back touchdowns over their last 4 games. Meanwhile, Kamara has at least 7 receptions in 3 of the 4 starts he's made since his return from suspension. And he has double-digit receptions in half of those games.
Well, we have a match. I did not feel good about it, quite honestly. But I was like, well, he's only 7,300. Man, that's barely pay-up territory, right? But then you look at everybody else outside of Christian McCaffrey, and you're like, yeah, he's right there with everybody else. And a lot of those higher-priced guys, to me, have rough matchups, or I don't think that they're going to get 3 times value. So I looked up Indy stats. They're not as impressive as you would think right now. So, yeah, I'm going to have a Alvin Kamara in my thing as the pay-up player this week also.
One of those guys that's above him in the price tag is the guy that I am staying away from. I did not choose Christian McCaffrey as my stay away, mainly because we hadn't seen today. We didn't know how active he would be today by the time that I put this together. So we're watching Monday Night Football right now. Currently, it's midway through the second quarter, and the Vikings are leading 10-0, which is a bit of a shock. But we didn't really know what to expect from McCaffrey. All signs point to him getting through the game okay and coming back next week and being fine. Cincinnati is kind of a mid-matchup one way or the other. So the guy I'm staying away from, though, is Derrick Henry versus Atlanta. Only one team has allowed fewer total touchdowns to the running back position. And only on the season, Atlanta has allowed only one touchdown total on the ground. So they've given up one running back score all season and only three total touchdowns to the position. The Falcons have also held their last three opponents to an average of only 70 rushing yards per game. Plus, Henry has actually started to see some of his workload be siphoned off to Tyjae Spears. And there's talk about potential trade scenarios involving Henry. So maybe he won't get the full touches. Maybe he'll get more touches as they look to pitch him to other teams. But again, I could see a situation where his numbers are going to look underwhelming this week.
So we have a match. Trust me, I looked at a couple of guys. Saquon Barkley, I was like, first of all, same spot you were on McCaffrey. Like, not a horrible matchup, not sure about the injury designation, so that's why I just kind of balked on him. Barkley, I was able to talk myself into both maybe putting him as my pay-up and also my stay-away, which means I'm not going to even touch him. Same with Mostert, like, against New England. I hate that matchup, quite honestly, right? But I don't know how many people are going to look at him and take that seriously, quite honestly. Derrick Henry, you nailed exactly why he's my guy. I could look at, who am I looking at here that I was going to say the same thing about that I had concerns with that was lower price? Tony Pollard, don't like him against Dallas, I mean, against the Rams that much. And, Barkley. So if you look at just the numbers and take the team out, it looks like a great matchup on paper. I just have a hard time feeling that, like, I believe that the Jets are going to continue to give up a lot of points to running backs with as stout as that defense is. So that's why I kind of talked about
Well, it's interesting with that, matchup is I actually had Barkley originally listed as my stay away. But one of the things I looked at after the fact was the Jets, while they're doing a decent job of stopping the run on the ground, they have really struggled this season with pass catching running backs. And Barkley is certainly used in the passing game for the Giants.
And that doesn't make sense to me either because they got two really good, fast, good coverage linebackers in Mosley and Quincy Williams. So it's like I have Saquon written in both spots. I have him written down in both pay up and stay away and crossed out in both. So that just tells you how conflicted I was on him. Who's your value play?
We might make a match here too. I'm not sure. I kind of went down the list and again, it was the same thing where a lot of players, I was like, either way, not too horrible, not too bad. But one player really jumped out at me, and that's in the game that we were just talking about is one that I think that is going to be kind of an under-the-radar game for points, and that's Houston at Carolina. I'm going with Damian Pierce at Carolina. Only four teams are allowing more yards per carry than Carolina. They're giving up nearly 5 yards per carry to opposing rushing attacks, and they've allowed a league-worst 11 running back rushing scores, despite already having had their bye week. Imagine if they had played that game, they'd be leading the league even worse in running back scores allowed. Coming off a bye and an absolute dud prior to that, I have a strange feeling that no one is going to have Damian Pierce in their lineups. He's going to make a great under-the-radar play this week.
Yeah, that's not hard to take, honestly. That you made that medicine very easy to digest, honestly. Not who I've got, and I'm trying to pull up an extra number on my guy. I guess it doesn't matter, actually, because they stayed the same. Whether you look at the first 6 weeks or the last 3 weeks, Arizona is third in points allowed to the running back position. Now, here's where my challenge was. Am I going to use Gus Edwards, or am I going to go to Justice Hill instead? And Justice is a lot cheaper, right? But it seems like Gus is just getting a few more important carries and goal line carries and stuff like that. So I was willing to pay a little more for Gus, but I probably would make, honestly, if I wanted to, I'd make the same lineup and I'd swap them and make one with one and one with the other so I didn't miss out. But I think one or both those guys could actually have very good games.
One other name I did consider, something to keep an eye on, is the injury status of Jerome Ford this week for Cleveland. If he is out with his ankle injury he sustained last week, Kareem Hunt would likely get the majority of the carries for Cleveland, including in the passing game. The $7,000 FanDuel price isn't great, but it's only $5,200 on DraftKings. Yep. The matchup isn't as great as you might think. Seattle has actually been decent against the run this year, which, again, I was a little surprised when I looked up the numbers and saw that they were as good as they were. But, again, based on volume alone, he could be a sneaky play if Ford is out, as I expect he will be.
Yeah, I think that Ford's going to be out for a week or two at least, from what I've saw, maybe until week 11 possibly. And then you don't know how Pierre Strong's going to play into this, but I do think the Cream's probably going to be the guy that's worth taking a look at there. I wrote both of their names down, believe it or not. But
who is your pay-up at wide receiver?
Well, I decided to kind of quasi-stack with my second pay-up quarterback, and he's had five consecutive games with 125 plus yards receiving, and I decided to go with AJ Brown and ride the hot hand, even though he's on the road and in Washington.
Well, listeners are going to be absolutely confused by this because I told you to stay away from Jalen Hurts.
And you're going to pay up for AJ Brown.
My pay up is AJ Brown at Washington. sometimes you have to throw correlation out the window.
Yep, exactly.
Only one team has allowed more wide receiver receiving yards than Washington, and no team has allowed more wide receiver touchdowns than Washington. This includes giving up 9 catches, 175 yards, and 2 touchdowns to Brown just over a month ago. So, yes, I am getting Brown into my lineup. Again, I'm a little concerned about Hurts' overall numbers, but Brown's still going to eat. He's cheaper than Hill, Kupp, and Chase.
Yep.
You just play him. It's a weird, like, bizarro world anti-correlation play, but I like it.
Well, I mean, let's look at it this way. Jalen Hurts could throw for 225 yards and one touchdown, and 125 of it and a touchdown go to A.J. Brown.
Very easily.
Right? He could go 7, 125, and 1, and then you're like, wow, he had a great day. What did Jalen Hurts say? Oh, wow, he had a kind of crappy day. How'd that happen? And he's not running it as much as he was. So, no, there's absolutely – I think people put too much stock in – the wide receiver's performance tied to the quarterback and vice versa. Each one can succeed, even though the quarterback, you're like, well, they're going to go off this game. And just because you think it's A.J. Brown, it could be Dallas Goedert and Devontae Smith, and A.J. Brown has a horrible game, and Jalen Hurts still has a great one. So they don't always tie at the hip, basically. But, yeah, we got a match there. Who are you staying away from?
We might match here, too. The over is going to be definitely hit. I'm going to stay away from Tyreek Hill versus New England. We talked a little bit about New England's ability to take away number one receivers last week. Well, get this. 4 different wide receiver ones, including Tyreek Hill, have scored against New England. So maybe that strategy is out the window. Oh, wait. In addition to scoring against New England, all of those wide receiver ones are averaging 4.4 receptions and 43 yards per game. This includes games against studs Devontae Adams, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, CeeDee Lamb, A.J. Brown, Stephon Diggs, and the aforementioned Tyreek Hill. So we're not talking against, say, against Treylon Burks and Drake London. We're talking against legit first and second round wide receivers being shut down apart from the occasional like oddball touchdown. $9,500 on both sites. There's no way in hell Tyreek Hill is going to do what he's been doing this week.
Yeah, I mean, even if he did, it's a long shot, right?
Very much.
I actually wrote somebody down before I wrote down Tyreek Hill and then wound up going to Tyreek Hill. So when you said Tyreek Hill, I was like, because I thought there was a chance you were going to say the guys I scratched out. Other than Hill, I actually do not like Cooper Kupp's matchup this week going on the road in Dallas with them coming off of a bye. Just don't. No, they don't have Trevion Diggs. I don't care. I don't like the matchup. But when you look at Hill's $500 and $400 more, I'll pass. We've hit the push.
We did. And this, we're going to hit the over and blow past it, I think, at this point.
I think we will, because I think we're definitely going to match at our pay up at tight end.
Well, I think we're going to not match at the value play. And this is going to probably disappoint you a little bit because I'm going to value play Terry McLaurin versus the Eagles. 5,300 on DraftKings, 7,000 on FanDuel, which is not really a value price on FanDuel, but 5,300 certainly is. Every single opposing wide receiver one to face Philadelphia has topped 17 PPR points. Three of them have topped 20 PPR points against Philly. This included Mr. McLaurin going for 8 catches, 86 yards, and oddball fumble recovery touchdown against them last month.
You're right. We don't match. I don't hate the play, honestly. I'm trying to find my guy. There he is. Okay. I went with the guy that's much cheaper. And if you look at the numbers, the team that he's facing, let's see if I can pull him up again because I can't understand my writing, believe it or not. Let's see. Yep. So do you know who's given up the most points to starting wide receivers, to fantasy wide receivers over the first full 6 weeks?
Who is that?
Seattle. The Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
Here's the problem. We don't know what we're really going to get at quarterback for Cleveland this week, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think it matters. Elijah Moore at $4,100. I don't like the $5,700 on FanDuel, but $4,100, I think that's a fantastic play. I don't hate your play. Terry McLaurin at $5,300 is severely, his price is severely depressed. He probably should be in the mid sixes, even with what he's had struggle wise this year. But yeah, I'm not going to have second guess. I'm going to Elijah Moore.
Yeah, again, I do like that as well. I assume that Deshaun Watson will play as long as his body says it's okay with him.
Yeah.
Or Stefanski says his body is okay with him. Or the trainers say his body is okay with him. Or whoever gets to make the decision this week.
That is the key, I think.
P.J. Walker, he was a great XFL quarterback. Yeah, he had some decent success starting for Carolina a couple years ago.
Yeah. Competent. He's competent, right? If it's like if he starts, you don't have to like throw everything out the window. Maybe you should, but you don't have to.
Listen up, Tyson Badgett fans. PJ Walker is what you get to look forward to in a couple of years, okay?
Yeah, there you go. And you know what? Badgett would be happy with his career to take that trajectory, quite honestly, with the amount of money that he'd make over that span doing that.
100%.
All right, let's go to tight end, Mr. Tight End Whisperer.
Okay, so I hemmed and hawed on this. I really wanted to make Mark Andrews my tight end play this week because his price is so much cheaper than Travis Kelce's.
Yeah.
But then I looked at the numbers, and it's Travis Kelce versus Denver. I could not pay up to play for over the last 3 weeks, Kelce leads all of football in receptions, wide receivers, running backs, and tight ends. He ranks third in receiving yards. And Denver allowed the most total yards to the tight end position this season, including 9 catches for 124 yards versus Kelce just 2 weeks ago.
So you're saying your payup is Travis Kelce?
Yeah, and again, I wouldn't mind if you said Andrews because I really wanted to do it. I mean, he's obviously far less money than Kelce. He's topped 60 yards in 4 straight games. He scored twice over that span. So either one is good. You know what? Make a double tight end lineup. There we go, double tight end time.
Oh god! So I don't know if we get a match here or not because I didn't pay up for Mr. Kelce. I paid up for Mr. Swift. I paid up for Travis Swift. Yeah, we've got a match. I paid up for Kelce too. Now, before you go saying double tight end lineup, let me tell you that because I'm paying up for Kelce, Mark Andrews is actually my stay away. I want to make sure that you don't even think about starting anybody other than Travis Kelce if you're paying anything above $4,000 basically or whatever it is at the tight end spot.
Now here's an interesting piece on Mark Andrews though. Mark Andrews is facing Arizona. And we always make fun of how bad Arizona is against the tight end position.
Ah, yes, but check it out.
They've ironically not given up a tight end touchdown this year. I had to like check the things like 3 times to see that it was actually true, but that's true.
Yep. They rank, let me see, they don't even make my screen. They rank so high or low, depending on which way you want to look at it. They're 31st in total points allowed to the tight end position this year. If we change it to the last 3 weeks, let's see what again, this is just through week 6 because week 7 points haven't populated for everybody yet. The last 3 weeks, that makes a little bit more of an argument for starting him. They're number 7 in fantasy tight end points allowed for weeks 4 through 6. But yeah, between the overall season that they've had and Travis Kelce having the matchup he has, Mark Andrews is my stay away.
Okay, well, my stay away is a little bit lower down the screen. He's 4,500 on DraftKings, 5,700 on FanDuel, and that's Evan Engram at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is allowing an average of 3 catches and 31 yards to the tight end position, and only one tight end has scored against them all season. And you know what, for Engram's sake, that offense in Jacksonville is a little off right now. He hasn't topped 50 yards receiving in any game since week 4.
Okay. No, that's not, we're not going to match. I don't disagree with it. I think it's a solid recommendation, quite honestly. And tight end's always weird with how the prices go, right? With what you're staying away from and you think are value plays and stuff like that. Who's your value play going to be?
My value play is more expensive than Engram. Now, I thought about doing Mark Andrews as my value play just to be a smartass, but I'm not going to do that.
I thought about I thought about it too, quite honestly, but that's okay.
My value play is Darren Waller versus the Jets, in which is basically a home game, even though they're going to be the the Giants are listed as the home team here. But again, it's at the stadium that they share. So Waller's been red hot of late. Obviously, a lot of that has been with Tyrod Taylor at the helm. We don't know who's going to start at quarterback yet. But the team has been focusing on getting Waller the ball. And no team has given up more tight end touchdowns this year than the Jets. So, again, at the sizable savings versus Travis Kelce and Mark Andrews, I love Waller as a value play this week. And also, I don't love any of the really cheap value plays this week. So, you know what? While you're at it, go to fanball.com and make a triple tight end lineup with Kelce, Andrews, and Waller.
Oh, goodness. Harley has possibly been drinking today. That is all I will say. So I had two guys I kind of liked as my value plays. One in a revenge-type setting, and that is Mike Gesicki, priced at $2,700 and $4,700. Love the $2,700. His former team, the Dolphins, are 10th over the last 3 weeks in points allowed to the tight end position. So that's not great. It's not bad, right? It's a solid matchup. But then the other guy that I looked at is Chig. He's facing an Atlanta team. They've given up the 5th most points to tight ends over that same time frame. And he's only $300 cheaper, and he's the same on FanDuel. So maybe I play Gesicki on DraftKings and Chig on FanDuel.
Yeah, I like that play a lot, too. I think while they've had some injuries to their receiving core there, Okonkwo is definitely seeing a few more targets for Tennessee. And, yes, we have noticed Atlanta struggle a little bit against the position, at least over the last 3-4 weeks.
Yes, we have. But you know what didn't struggle tonight? The over.
Who's that?
The over did not struggle tonight. We hit the over with 6. Oh. I knew that we had one in the bag with Kelce. That I knew, right? So I was looking at it as, all right, we've got to match 4 up top, right, to get the push. And I thought there was a chance we could hit on Andrews. Wasn't sure, but then there were some other ones I thought. The Rangers are taking it to Houston, by the way. It looks like the score. Oh, no, that was earlier. Never mind. Man, I'm out of my element tonight. It's 4-2 Texas. They got a guy on first and second with one out, and it's the top of the 4th. Okay. That all said, the over hit. If you have any other questions with regards to fantasy, reach out to Harley at New Clear Harley. You can reach out to me at Steve Gallo NFL. Of course, check out the Huddle for all the great features and stuff we have to help you dominate your fantasy league. And you know what? I know it's going to hit the 80s this week, believe it or not. That doesn't matter. Treat it like fall. Get yourself a good stout. Crack that bottle out. And as we like to say, get blitz responsibly. Cheers.
Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.